Yeah. During the 3 years that we had been back in Seattle from 1925 to 1928, I went to Fader here. The Fader was on 15th and Alder. And I was bar mitzvah at Vicar Coram. The rabbi was Winogrand, Rabbi Winogrand. The shamus was Doris. And we used to go down to the Collins playfield. The biggest thing when we went to shul, when we were supposed to be at shul Saturday, was to go down to Collins playfield, which was a block away and which was more attractive than the shul. When we went back to Port Angeles, then I was 13 years old, and Saul Levy, when I was growing up in Seattle, we were members of Vicar Coram, and would have no contact at all with Temple D. Hirsch, who were the Reform, and were really quite a world apart from us. But when we were back in Port Angeles, Saul Levy was quite Reformed in contrast to us, and he knew Rabbi Koch at Temple D. Hirsch, and so he made arrangements with Rabbi Koch to conduct a Sunday school, really a Sunday school at Port Angeles. There were about four students in it, Leon Levy and myself. And Rabbi Koch sent Saul Levy materials, and Leon and I prepared and all. And we were confirmed. We came down and we were confirmed at Temple D. Hirsch. I guess I was 14 years old then, and that would be 1929. But we were confirmed at Temple D. Hirsch with Rabbi Koch. The rest of the Jewish community, ultimately, all the people that we knew, as far as I know, all left Port Angeles. There are many more now there, but they are all new, and so far as I know, they don't have any connection with the Jewish community that I knew at that time. One of the little memories that I have, I think I mentioned this to you, but I can tell it again if you like, was my dad always raised chickens. All the time that we were in Port Angeles, my dad, we always had a garden, and not much of a garden, but he always raised chickens. And he always wanted to bring chickens down to my aunt in Seattle, but of course they would not accept them unless they were killed by the shorter, ritually slaughtered by the shorter. So we had to bring them down alive. And that was always quite an experience. We had to bundle up the chickens, and I remember once one got out. We were on the ferry, and I was chasing the chicken around, and it was a miserable experience. But we managed, and we brought the chickens down alive. And my dad always had them caponized because he wanted them to be big and fat. So we brought chickens down. We raised Plymouth Rock chickens and Rhode Island Red chickens. Those are the big fat varieties. Those are really the best roasting chickens. And my dad looked with scorn on the white leghorn chickens, which are the common chickens that the chicken ranchers raise, because he considered them fit for only for the goyim. I'm not sure he worded it that way, but they were not fat enough and big enough. So we raised chickens all the time. That was one of the... When I came home from school, every day coming home from school, there were two tasks that I had to do before I could do anything, before I could meet the other kids to play with at all. The first thing was to feed the chickens, and equally important with that was to get the chop wood and get the wood boxes in the kitchen filled, because we never had electric or any electric, or certainly not gas. We never had electric stoves there. I'm not sure if they were in yet then or not, but I know we didn't have any. But we had to chop kindling, had to chop three sizes of wood, and fill the three different boxes every day. Kindling for the kitchen range, and then the pieces, a couple inches in diameter or so, for burning in the kitchen range, and then the big pieces for the space heater that was in the middle. So feeding the chickens and chopping the wood were absolutely essential jobs. People don't have much appreciation for jobs like that these days. And the other one was to empty the pan of water under the icebox. Occasionally, my dad would usually do that, or I would do it, but occasionally one of us would forget. And the water would overflow and flow out over the kitchen floor, and I still remember how upset my mother was at the water flowing out over the whole kitchen floor when we had forgotten to empty the pan under the icebox. Well, let's see. Where will we go on?
So then, from there. You stayed in Seattle from when?
1925 to 1928.
And then?
Back in Port Angeles for 2 years and then back in Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay. Again.
By that time.
See, in 1925, I was 10 years old, and my mother and dad thought they knew my bar mitzvah would be approaching and thought we ought to be back in Seattle. So we came back, but then, as I say, we had to move back again because the man who had bought my dad's business ultimately was not successful with it, and he had to take it back, so we ended up back there again. So it entailed quite a bit of moving. One of the stories that I remember my mother telling me when the first Sephardic Jews arrived in Seattle, the first ones to come were the Ashkenazim. The Sephardic community first started coming a number of years later, and I think the first of them were in the early 1900s. And I know
very,
that
very early, a few came.
Maybe a few
but
early.
But the bulk came after World War II.
World War One.
Yeah, around 1920.
Well, when the first ones came, which may have been early 1900s, I don't know just now. And I know I have read about this before, but my mother told me the story so vividly. The Jewish people who were here were not at all sure about these newcomers. They were so different. The biggest difference was that they did not speak Yiddish, and even part of some of their liturgy, songs, food customs, very different, language different. They were not at all sure that they were Jewish. And they had to satisfy themselves first. And my mother said that my grandfather was one of those who was deeply puzzled or a little bit bewildered by these people who were so different from them. There was some, of course, and we hear a great deal about this. There was friction between the communities to begin with. And sometimes people now find that hard to understand. Looking back on it, I don't find it that hard to understand. There was friction between the German communities or the descendants of the Germans who were here and the Eastern European Jews who came in. Most of the people who I was friendly or close with did not have a great deal of contact with the others, and there was just a separation between the communities. And there certainly was a separation between the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi communities to begin with. But over a period of time, in our own family, there was none. I mean, I had Sephardic friends who, the Franco brothers, Alhadif brothers, and others who were just as close as anybody else. And in our family, my mother would just not hear of any separation at all. But I know that there was in many cases. But that diminished. It steadily diminished, and of course, in time disappeared. Well, let's see.
So, when you came back in 1928, you came back to Seattle?
Yes.
By that time, you must have been in high school?
13. I was, I was, uh,
13, but you said 14.
I was 14.
No, you were in Port Angeles. No, I'm sorry.
We went back to Port Angeles for 2 years then. That's right.
Yes, it was 30 when you came.
That's right. We lived in the Schloss Apartments, 125 25th Avenue.
Okay.
125 25th Avenue.
All right.
25th and Cherry. That was.
Yeah, that was the heart of the Jewish.
That's right. The 3 years previous that we lived there, it was at 538 31st Avenue, which was 31st and Cherry. And that was, it was a quite a Jewish neighbor, not Jewish in the sense that some Eastern, there were some Jewish communities in the East which were almost entirely Jewish. It was not that heavily Jewish, but certainly quite heavily Jewish. Brenner's Delicatessen Bakery was on Cherry Street at 28th. Wine Roads Grocery was on 30th and Cherry. There were other Jewish grocery stores, two or three, in the area. So there was enough of a community. There was a fairly solid Jewish community in that area at that time. We all went to Garfield High School, and Garfield was quite heavily Jewish, and also other minorities. There were a good many. There weren't so many Chinese and Japanese, but there were some, and of course, Blacks, at that time Negroes, there were quite a few of them there. Garfield was really a melting pot of a school, and an outstanding school, an exceptional school. There was no friction. Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah was on 25th and Cherry at the time. So that was the heart of the Jewish area. The Jewish area had been 15th, 16th, and 17th, and Yesler, and up to probably 23rd and Yesler, because there were many Jewish businesses in there. Brenner's, Lippmann's Bakery on 23rd near Yesler. Brenner's originally had been on Yesler at about 16th or 17th, and other Jewish stores were all along Yesler in those several blocks. Vicar Colum, of course, was built on 17th and Yester. My uncle and aunt, the Moslers, who we were very, very close with, built two apartment houses. They owned two apartment houses on 15th and Yester, on the corner of 15th and Yester. And that was two blocks down the hill from the shul, which was on 17th and Yester. They were in, my cousin Nate and George, all went to Pacific School, which was just two blocks away from there. Also on the Yesler.
That was the elementary school?
Yes. Yeah. My mother went to Old Central School. Old Central School, which was in the area where the Seattle Center now is. They had moved it by that time when she was small, when she was in grammar school. They lived in a house, I don't know the exact location of it, but it is probably, it was about where the Space Needle, or those buildings in the Seattle Center, it was about where the Space Needle is now. And but it, we never knew, I never knew the house because it had gone before my time. But she went to the Central School, which was somewhere in that area. I don't know. I'm not sure where the school was.
That was a sort of out-of-the-way place for them to live.
I suppose it was, but that was very early. That's before they had moved to the Yesler Way district. I don't know where they lived in the days before my dad came. I don't have any memory of that. The earliest house that I have a memory of was on 22nd, just off of Yesler. 22nd, just north of, probably two or three houses north of Yesler. But all the Jewish people lived. They lived there. There also was, a large Jewish community around Broadway High School, around what's now the Broadway area. lot, those were the earlier people in the wealthy, the better established people. And many of those houses are still very prominent now.
So you graduated from Garfield?
Yes.
And after that?
Let's see, that would be 1932. At that time, my parents had moved to Tacoma. They moved to Tacoma in 1931. And I still had 1 year left. I was a junior at Garfield. I still had 1 year left. And I didn't want to move to Tacoma. I really hated the idea. I had moved around a great deal. We had moved. I've skipped over a number of these, but we really moved. I had changed school a great many times. And that last year of high school, I really did not want to move to Tacoma. So I lived with an aunt of mine, my Aunt Sophie Steiner. At 31st Avenue, and I lived with her for that year when I was a senior. Then in 1932, I graduated from Garfield. And at that time, my parents were living in Tacoma. And they lived there for quite a number of years. My dad had operated a dress shop there. And later, when I went over there and was visiting there, but that was a number of three years later, my brother had become very friendly with Floyd Lampkin, and I was visiting my brother's friend, Floyd, at his house when I met his sister, who was mine. And that was 4 years later after that. Molly had been born and raised in Tacoma. And, but I rescued her. So after we were married, we came back to see and my parents stayed in, they had come back to Seattle. As I say, my dad really moved a great deal. They had come back to Seattle and stayed here. They lived here a couple of years and then went back to Tacoma again. And then they had a house and they lived in Tacoma until my dad died. And my dad died at age 76, 1956. And then my mother moved back to Seattle and lived here until she died, she lived she was 86.
Well, when you finished high school, did you take a job or go on?
No, I was at university and I went to University of Washington here. From 1932 to 1936, I took a job and I worked for a hotel, Green Winkler, a hotel and restaurant, Sapon. Until we were married, Molly and I were married. Well, including a year after that. Until 1939, when I went into the was drafted into the Coast Guard. I went in the Coast Guard. I shouldn't say I was drafted. I knew I would be. I was soon going to be drafted. And actually, I didn't wait. I volunteered. I knew by volunteering I would be able to choose the branch of service that I was in, rather than being drafted. So I volunteered and I joined the Coast Guard, and that was it was right after Pearl Harbor. I was still working for the hotel and restaurant supply, and it was right at Pearl Harbor. Was December 7th. That we're getting up to 41. That's right, because we were still living. Susan was born already at that time, and I joined the Coast Guard. And of all places that I was first dispatched to, I was sent to Port Angeles. And I was stationed for a year in Port Angeles. I was in a unit which patrolled the harbor. And I lived in, we stayed in Port Angeles when Susan was 6 months. Susan was 6 months old. She was born December 22nd, 1941. We moved there in June of 42, and we were there for a year. I was in uniform, and I was in the Coast Guard then. Then I was transferred to Tacoma, doing the same thing. That is, I was a member of a unit. At that time, the Coast Guard had the responsibility of patrolling the harbor to keep track of the movements of all the ships that were in it. So we had small boats, and we kept all the information on ships entering and leaving the harbor. So then I was stationed in Port Angeles, in Tacoma. So I was in the Coast Guard through the war. My brother was in the Coast Guard too. He became an executive officer aboard a ship, the Siam, patrolling the Aleutian Islands. Very, very rugged duty, very stormy, very dangerous duty. He had gone to officers' training school. They sent him to officers' training school. He became a lieutenant, second lieutenant, an ensign, I mean, I'm sorry, became an ensign, and was executive officer aboard the Siam and the Aleutian Islands. And my mother did her share of worrying over that because it was pretty isolated, and the Japanese were all, the Japanese had taken a couple of the islands there. I think, I forget the names of them, Attica or Etka Island. Well, Sitka is the town. They had taken the farthest out islands. The Aleutian Islands are a long string of islands, and they took the first two of them. And my brother's ship was patrolling the rest of them. So very stormy weather and almost in direct contact. So it was kind of rugged duty, and we were all glad when the war ended and he came back. To digress now, he's in Pine Gallery right now.
So when did you get into the printing business?
Right after the war. At the end of the war. At the end of the war, Molly was very accomplished in journalism. She was editor of her newspaper in Tacoma. And we knew we didn't want to live in Tacoma. We wanted to come back to Seattle. And we got started in a small shop at 909 Third Avenue. And it was just Molly and me to start with. And it grew from that. It was mimeographing and monographing at that time. And then the following year, Gary was born. And about a year after that, my brother joined me, and he was with me all that time. And I had no background in the printing business at all. We really started in that primarily because Molly could write well, and we were interested in doing some advertising work where we could use her abilities. And I rather liked printing. I mean, although I had no background in it, I enjoyed it. And so it just seemed very natural to start. It just seemed natural. So we did it.
That's a good reason.
Well, I think other things might have also, but that one
worked.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, Gary is continuing in it now. Gary's doing fine now.
So you stayed in the business until you retired?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what about some of the community activities? Do you recall aside from being president of Bethon and AJC, were you involved in anything else?
Community activity?
Yeah.
I started the Viewers Swim Club.
Okay, all right, the Viewers Swim Club.
The Viewers Swim Club. How are they... Howard Angel was president of the View Ridge Community Club. There was a more active community club. And he needed some help writing a newsletter, so I volunteered, I helped him write a newsletter. And we kept up a newsletter for quite some time. One day, one Sunday afternoon, he was over at our house, and I was remarking to him that the community is becoming better established now. There is not much... Because there's not much, there aren't new things developing. We don't need a newsletter so much anymore. And we decided, well, maybe we ought to start something new. And we kind of hashed it over for a while, and we thought of the idea of a swim club. So Howard Angel and I started it. We found the location down there. We got together, a dozen people or so, and I remember we solicited people for $10 the first day just to put together a mailing and the first bit of information to gather people who were interested. And then we got together enough contributions to make a down payment on the property there, and we got the thing underway. So that's what started the View Ridge Swimming and Tennis Club. Yeah, I started. And I was, as you know, I was active in Bethon. One little memory that I have of the starting of Bethon, before we started Bethon, there was some suggestion of Temple D. Hirsch starting a branch in the North End. There was talk of it or suggestion of it. Dorothy Sarin was very interested in it at the time. And Dorothy Sarin and I went to a board meeting of Temple D. Hirsch. And I made a pitch. I made a presentation to their board asking them if they would be interested in starting a branch in the North End here. And they took it under advisement, and they asked Dorothy and me to wait outside while they discussed it. And so we did. And then we came back a little later, and they said that they had decided against it, that they were not interested in opening a branch. And so I remember I sat with Dorothy on the front of their lobby there, and I said, let's just call a meeting and let's get started. And so the first meeting we called was at Dorothy Sarin's house, and we had quite a group, all of us. And then, and we got started. And within a very short time, Dorothy came to me one day and she said, I just can't go on with it. She said, I've been in Temple D. Hirsch all my life. And she said, I just can't bring myself to leave it. And so she dropped out. And their name is still on the list there. That list of first group of the founding members, you'll see Dorothy and Marshall Sarin on it. And I don't think they ever came to the second meeting, or third meeting, maybe. They may have come to the first two. But she told me one day she just can't go there. So they were on there. But that's what led to the beginning of it was our little group, which you know, you're familiar with, the group of people who used to meet Friday evening. And then others came along. Bill Ruth Witkin was active at the very start, and others who I'm sure you're familiar with. I didn't become president the first year. Actually, I was not that, I enjoyed starting it, but I was not that interested in heading it, and I didn't think of myself as president of it. In the first year, I forget who was president the first year, Lutz Loeb and then Kramer. Lutz was either the first year or second year. Maybe the first year. Was he the first?
All right. I don't remember who was second.
And he was another one who was the first president but never stayed that active. At any rate.
Was he on the board at any time?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, sure.
You were active.
Yeah, oh, I was on the board. Oh, absolutely. But then I became president either the third or fourth year, somewhere in there. And we had the rabbi who was a chaplain at Fort Lewis. I think he was the first one. He was a chaplain at Fort Lewis. And he came in his spare time and worked with us, and he was quite fine. Then we had another man,
Zimmerman,
who later left to South Africa. He was first. Was he before the man from
no,
Fort
he was
Lewis?
After.
That's what I thought.
The first full-time man.
He was the first full-time. He was here for, what, perhaps a year. I don't remember. And then Rabbi Olitz, who was here, I think, for 2 years.
No, four.
Four. Good heavens. All right. He was here for 4 years. He left in 1962. I think 62.
That's when Rabbi Hirsch
came. Not long.